Chapter 5. The Field. Electrons are both waves and particles. One minute they act like a particle and the next minute they act like a wave. At the time, no one could really believe any of this was actually true. Something must be wrong, they thought. So the scientists modified the experiment to watch with a measuring device as a single electron went through the double slits to see if it really acted like a wave instead of a particle. However, the moment they observed the electron, an even stranger thing happened. They got a standard particle pattern on the screen that looked exactly as if they had fired BBs through the two slits. The simple act of watching the electron meant it went back to behaving like a particle instead of a wave, and therefore only went through one slit, not both, and formed a pattern like the BBs. There is another short and well-done animated video of how an observer affects the double-slit experiment from What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole, available to watch on YouTube. So, the final conclusion is this. In its natural state, an electron is a wave rather than a particle until it is observed. Then it becomes a particle with a fixed position in space and time. Dr. Amit Goswami, theoretical nuclear physicist, put it this way.
So the electron is very peculiar. The electron is very peculiar in the sense that when you are not looking, electron can be here, can be there, or can be over there. In the corner of this room. It can be all over this room, so to speak. But whenever we look, this is the strange thing about these electrons. Whenever we look, we always find them to be in one particular Geiger counter, although we may have a room full of Geiger counters. This is the fundamentally important stuff about the electrons.
And in his book, The Holographic Universe, Michael Talbot said, there is compelling evidence that the only time quanta ever manifest as particles is when we are looking at them. When an electron isn't being looked at, it is always a wave. By the way, in the early 1900s, scientists had started using the term quanta, referring to the energy associated with an electron bound to an atom at rest, which results in the stability of atoms and of matter in general. So the term quantum mechanics, and now more commonly quantum physics, has to do with the study of electrons and their energy. The word quantum is also synonymous with wave and particle, a term that is used to refer to something that possesses both particle and wave qualities. Now, this was truly radical. An electron is a wave until it is observed, and then it becomes a particle. The ramifications are enormous. It means reality, the physical universe which we have always thought of to be solid and predictable, is not real, not solid and predictable at all, because the basic building blocks of that universe are not particles of matter, but waves of possibilities. Waves of potential locations where an electron might appear as a particle when it is observed. But who is this observer? And how does an observer change the electron from a wave into a particle? The first question is not easy to answer completely at the moment. The observer can be a human being looking at something. It can be a machine or a device set up to watch, record, or measure something. It can literally be anything that attempts to see something out there in the physical universe. But there is another level to the answer which needs more information before it can make sense, so we'll just have to wait. Right now, it's worth repeating the inescapable conclusions of the double-slit experiment. According to quantum physics, the atoms, nucleus and electrons, that make up the physical universe we consider to be so solid and so real, only appear to be solid and real when they are being observed. When they are not being observed, they return to a wave state of infinite possible locations. Now let's talk about how an observer changes an electron from a wave into a particle. Wait a minute. No one really knows the answer to the question of how or why the observer changes an electron from a wave into a particle. The experts can only speculate. As Dr. Fred Alan Wolf, theoretical physicist, says,
particles aren't really what they seem to be. They're momentary manifestations, momentary poppings of this deeper imaginary realm, this wave-like realm, this implicate order, as David Bohm would say it, this quantum wavy function, as quantum physicists might talk about it, in which there is no particle. There's just this waviness which can spontaneously pop out as particle.
In other words, when an electron is viewed by an observer, these waves of possibilities pop and assume a specific location in space and time, which is what we see as reality. This is called collapsing the wave function. Collapsing the wave function can be very successfully explained and predicted mathematically using complex quantum mathematics, but it's very hard to describe in simple English. Basically, it means an electron normally lives in a wave state, a wave function, that includes many possibilities of where it could end up as a particle. And when the electron is observed, those multiple wave states are collapsed to one state, the state of being a particle in a specific location. Physicist Nick Herbert says this sometimes causes him to imagine that behind our back, the world, where we are not looking and cannot observe, is always, quote, erratically ambiguous and ceaselessly flowing quantum soup, unquote. But whenever we turn around and try to see the soup, our glance instantly freezes it and turns it back into reality. Herbert believes this makes us all a little like Midas, the legendary king who never knew the feel of silk or the caress of a human hand, because everything he touched turned to gold. Herbert said, likewise, humans can never experience the true texture of quantum reality because everything we touch turns into matter. So where are these electrons living as waves of possibilities when no one is observing them and collapsing their wave function into a particle? The answer to that question has gone through a lot of revision over the years and has been called a lot of things as the research has progressed, including the Planck scale by the physicist Max Planck, the implicate order by the physicist David Bohm, the vacuum state, the quantum wave function, the zero-point field, the superstring field, the M field, and the unified field. Today, it is mainly just called the field. In her book, The Field, Lynn McTaggart defines it simply as a field of all possibility. Everything you can think of, and everything you can't think of, and everything no one can think of already exists in this field as waves of possibilities. Dr. John Hagelin, physics professor at Maharishi University, explains,
progress in our understanding of the universe through physics over the past quarter century has been exploring deeper levels of natural law, from the macroscopic to the microscopic, from the molecular to the atomic to the nuclear to subnuclear levels of nature's functioning. And what we've discovered at the core basis of the universe, the foundation of the universe, is a single universal field of intelligence, a field which unites gravity with electromagnetism, light with radioactivity, with the nuclear force, so that all the forces of nature and all the so-called particles of nature, quarks, leptons, protons, neutrons, are now understood to be just different ripples on a single ocean of existence. That's called the unified field or superstring field. A single universal field of intelligence, an ocean of existence, at the basis of everything, mind and matter. And all the so-called particles of the universe, the forces in our universe, everything in the universe, are just ripples of on that ocean of existence. That's the unified field. And that field is a non-material field. Planets, trees, people, animals, we're all just waves of vibration of this underlying unified superstring field. It's the fountainhead of all the laws of nature, all the fundamental forces, all the fundamental particles, all the laws governing life at every level of the universe have their unified source in the unified field. That makes the unified field the most concentrated field of intelligence in nature. Non-material, dynamic intelligence. Those are the properties of the unified field. So the tighter physics have tried to grasp onto physical reality, to understand what it's really made of, what are the core building blocks of life, at the basis of it all. Life, the universe, slips through your fingers, and you come up with something that's increasingly abstract, to come to the realm of pure abstraction. And that's what the unified field is. It's pure abstract potential, which rises in waves of vibration to give rise to the particles, the people, everything we see in the vast universe. This isn't the world of electrons. It's the world of potential electrons. And that's what we're made of.
And Dr. Fred Alan Wolf puts it this way.
Physicists just give this a name. They call it our quantum wave function because it seems wavy. However, this wave function isn't just a wave of matter like an ocean wave or a sound wave or any kind of wave of matter. It's a wave of possibility. It's a kind of thought wave. And because it is a wave of thought or possibility or not matter, it's invisible to us. But we can't explain what we do see as matter in these small corners of space and time unless we picture that these matter particles somehow come out from or emerge from these thought wave patterns which are invisible to us.
You can watch a video interview about the field with Drs. Hagelin and Wolf from What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole on YouTube. The problem is, no one can prove that the field exists. You can't see it. You can't photograph it. You can't measure it. You can't hold it in your hand. But when quantum physicists assume the field is there, they can make incredibly accurate mathematical predictions about the physical universe and how it behaves, which they cannot do without taking the field into account. As Fred Alan Wolf said, we can't explain what we do see as matter unless we picture that these matter particles somehow come out from or emerge from these thought wave patterns. Think of it as electricity. You can't see electricity itself. You can only see what electricity produces. One American comedian joked he wouldn't pay his electric bill until the company showed him the electricity he was paying for. But we can see the light electricity makes, and the power, and the other effects we count on every day and now take so much for granted. And when we see those effects, we know electricity must exist. The same thing is true for the field. Even though we can't prove it exists scientifically, nothing makes sense without it in light of the results of the most recent experiments. Another example might help make this clearer. If you were an Aborigine living in the outback of Australia with no contact with the outside world, and someone brought you a radio, you might wonder how it works when you hear music coming out of the box. You might even take it apart, looking for an orchestra of very little people inside playing the music you hear. But, after a while, you'd realize the only way to explain the music is to assume there are invisible radio waves in the air, and this box simply captures those waves and translates them into sound, even though you couldn't prove it. We have finally reached the point of human understanding, now supported by scientific evidence, that there are waves all around us. But this time they're not radio waves, they're not ocean waves, they're waves of the field. their waves of potentiality, and when they are observed, they turn into the physical universe we see. I'll talk a lot more about this concept in later chapters. For now, it is enough to know the field must exist. It is outside of space and time, and it includes an infinite number of possibilities, but only in wave form. This field does not contain particles. It is not matter. It is not part of the physical universe. Instead, it is what the entire universe is made from these waves of possibilities. But how did this field come into existence? Who made it? Where did it come from? Science has no answer for these questions. They only know the field must exist. So I will not speculate about how the field was created, or who might have created it, or how it already contains all possibilities, because, well, simply because there is absolutely no way a human adult can understand or have a direct experience of anything that happens on the other side of the field. This will also become clearer in later chapters. The next question we can ask, though, is how is physical reality created from this field?